I got so much to tell you, so let's go kick some art, art, art. Go kick some art, art, art.
Kia ora and welcome to Kick Arts, proudly brought to you this June by Foolish Wit Theatre Company. Kick Arts is Aotearoa's comprehensive art show brought to you on Planet FM 104.6 and streaming live around the globe thanks to our podcasts, which you can download from planetaudio.org.nz or find us on Spotify. Tonight, filling the co-host seat is past intern Patrick, who is going to be chatting with me and our guests from three upcoming productions, as well as a very talented young performer about her upcoming fundraising concert. But to kick it off, here is Jasmine Mary with her latest track, Memphis. And that was Jasmine Mary. Well, welcome to the show, everyone. Patrick, welcome back.
Thank you. Long time no host, I guess.
Well, last time you were here, because you filled in for me one time, but I wasn't here, so it was you and Stephen.
Yeah.
So it's lovely to have you sitting here. I know you've been really busy, but we'll talk about that later.
Mm-hmm.
But I've got someone sitting on air waiting to speak to us, live from Tauranga, kia ora.
Kia ora. Hello, Emma and Patrick. How are we?
Good. Have you got FOMO?
Oh, yeah. It's very strange knowing... Well, it's just this whole strange thing of Sunday night. We've done Sunday nights for 5 years. So it's very weird when you're sitting in a hotel room going, oh, what should I be doing? What's on TV on a Sunday night? Not a lot is the answer.
Well, you can sit and watch Not a Lot on TV and leave the volume on and laugh at me making mistakes on the board.
You'll get the hang of it. By the time I come back, you won't want me back in the seat.
Yeah, you can come back and speak, but I'll sit in the hot seat. So anyway, what have you been up to this week? Because I know you've been travelling and doing things.
Yeah, it's a busy week. So started the week in Melbourne and caught Melbourne University's fabulous first semester performance for their dance students, some of which you interviewed a week or so ago. So that was fantastic. Back to Auckland to catch your fabulous 13 on Friday night. Really enjoyed it, Emma, at the Pump House. It's a great musical, but you had a fabulous team bringing that together. So well done.
Thank you.
That was awesome. Then up to Whangarei yesterday for We Will Rock You, which was a load of fun. And it was matinee, so the audience full of senior citizens who were all rocking it hard, which was great. And then from Whangarei back to Tauranga now.
Oh, how ridiculous. So you went from Auckland to Whangarei and then to Tauranga. Like, was that very well planned?
Yeah, you know, us theatre people, we do crazy things, don't we? But a great day of rehearsals here for Juicy Boys. I'm loving my cast who arrived, scripts down at every blocking rehearsal already. And I'm just like, wow.
Now, imagine if we had scripts down at blocking rehearsals this early on as directors. It would be amazing. I'm sure that the directors in the room that I'm about to introduce would be like agreeing, going, yeah, that would be great.
It's huge. And it just means you can get straight into good character stuff and polishing without mucking around. It's wonderful. Enough about me. What about your week? Well, you've been flat out with 13 all week. I guess you haven't got to see anything else.
No, I haven't gone and seen anything else this week. There's been a few things I've missed out on. But, yep, 13's all over and done, thank goodness. And then next week, of course, I fly off to Queenstown for the New Zealand premiere of the teen edition of Six. So that will be
amazing.
A fantastic week of getting those, my lovely queens down at Wakatipu High School, ready to jump on the stage.
Absolutely, and we'll welcome back into the studio Taylor and Adam, who will once again caretake with both of us away.
Definitely. All right, well, I need to get on with the people sitting in my studio. So
have an amazing night.
We will, and have fun in that hotel.
Thank you. Take care, guys.
See you later. Wow. Well, he's pretty lucky. Melbourne and everything. Who would have thought? Anyway, so... I meant to release him somehow, but anyway, he's gone. There we go. He's done. Just playing with the phones. So let's get on with introducing who's in our studio. So first of all, from the Dolphin Theatre, I'd love to introduce Nairi and Richard.
Kia ora.
Kia ora. Thank you for having us.
And I should probably turn your mics up when you say that.
We'll say hello again.
You'll say hello again. Oh, my goodness. I really aren't having a good go right now, am I? And then... to the stage left of them, I always have to say that, you know, or I put my hand up to show the L, we've got Katie and Nick.
Hello.
So let's start over here. So first of all, let's start with you, Katie. Tell us about what's happening in your life or about to happen, because it's all pretty exciting.
It is. So I'm about to move to London to go to drama school. So I'm going to the Guildford School of Acting. And we are about to put on a fundraiser just to fundraise some money and with some of my friends, theatre friends, this Tuesday at the Pump House.
Cool. So tell us, what made you decide London or that particular school?
Well, Guildford's actually always been my dream school of all time to go to. It's kind of was also the first drama school I had ever heard of. So my dad went to Guildford. And so, yeah, so that's how I heard about it. And then London was always kind of an obvious choice for me because my family's from there. It was familiar.
So does that mean because your family's from there, you get their fees? You're not having to pay those hideous international fees?
My God, I wish, but no, no, the international fees are, they are being paid. So hopefully if people come to the fundraiser, they will be,
that's
much
cover
better.
The cost, yeah, you have to be resident in the UK for 3 years
to
actually.
Oh, really? Yeah.
But that's the deal, that's fair enough. We're all dual nationals, but unfortunately that's not enough.
Wow, yeah, crazy times.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Okay. So what will people get on Tuesday if they pop along to the Pump House?
Well, there will be lots of songs that I've done before. Sometimes, so me and my friend Matt Bruce, we're doing some songs from, we're doing DeLovely, we were in Anything Goes together. I've got friends like Drew Young, Emily Patterson, we're doing Easy Street. Really fun numbers from musicals that people well known. Doing Last Midnight, I did Into the Woods back in 2023. So kind of revisiting some old shows, doing some new things that I love. I've got one of my really good friends, Videla Tamihana, and that I dance with at Neverland Studios. So we'll be doing some dancing. Connor Charlesworth, who actually also went to GSA, but he was an ex-Westlake student. He's also coming along and performing as well. So yeah, so it's like a big kind of almost like family vibe, good vibes all around, I think. So yeah.
Fantastic. Okay, well, we'll talk, Bill, about that in a moment. Let's jump along to London Suite. Why is it a suite?
Well, it's a suite as in, a hotel room. People might be familiar with, like, the suite life of Zach and Cody. they're getting nods over here. And so it's a series of, it's an anthology play sort of thing, so it's four separate stories, completely unrelated, but they all take place in the same hotel room at different points in time. So it's a one act, the part of the one act series that Dolphin does like every other year. They'll do, you know, three or four one acts, but this one is good because you actually get to build a proper set for it rather than just kind of like implying three different sets. We can just make a nice London hotel suite and then, yeah, tell four different stories in there.
So does that mean that there are four different directors?
That does mean that, yeah. I'm one of the four directors. I'm directing a scene called Diana in Sydney, which is, if people know Neil Simon, and I know we have some fans in the room, you might know he did a play and then there was a movie called California Suite, and Maggie Smith actually won an Oscar for playing the character of Diana, who is then there's a sequel to that scene in London Suite.
Right,
and that's all these characters 20 years later. That's the scene I'm directing.
That's the scene you're directing. Okay, and you've brought with you into studio Nairi. So is that the scene that you're acting as well?
Absolutely not.
Oh, absolutely not? Okay, cool. So tell us a little bit about your character or your scene.
Well, my character goes on before his character. I'm Cheryl in London, not in London Suite, and Going Home. You've got Diana in Sydney, haven't you, Richard? So, yes. So, like you said, four different plays within one situation. But mine's Cheryl. She's a widow. Her and her daughter have come to London to shop and, yeah, just revisit some happy memories of Cheryl's, I think.
And maybe find some love along the way.
Well, maybe.
Maybe. And who's directing your...
Carolyn Loder, a very good friend of mine, is directing. So that makes it really easy for me to give her what she wants.
Great. And is it just you in it?
Or no, I've got great...
Who's your daughter?
Yeah, I've got my daughter. So there's only... It's a two-hander. Our act is a two-hander. Mm-hmm. Some of the acts have more than two actors in them. So, yeah.
So who's your fellow actress? Oh,
that's the lovely Lindsay. She plays my daughter... Lauren. Oh, look. I've got no idea who my daughter is. My daughter's Morgan Hobson, actually, for real. But my onstage daughter is, Lauren.
Fantastic. Okay. And what brought you to the Dolphin?
I sort of did a show. I did a couple of shows there last year. I was in Clue, which I appeared on Kick Arts for, and then also
when I wasn't here,
when you were here, and then once again, yeah, I was in Proof at the Dolphin, and once again came on Kick Arts,
and I wasn't here.
but yeah, I had a friend that was in a couple of shows there, and so I was aware of the theatre. And then when I got made redundant at the end of 2023, yeah, I was like, well, hey, let's just, you know, fill the time some other way. And I had given up on my dream of acting after I trained as an actor in my early 20s. And then...
in London?
No, in Christchurch. and yeah, and then didn't do any acting for like 10 years. And then, yeah, after losing my job, I was like, well, hey, let's return to this this once crushed dream and see if I can uncrush it.
And are you feeling that it's getting uncrushed?
Yeah,
twice on stage and now directing?
Yeah, I've been saying, like, Clue was very, because Clue's like a big farce. It's very silly.
That is the one that's like Clue,
right? Yeah, and it's an adaptation of the movie as well. Mm-hmm. And that's very, like, you know, everyone is just fighting for attention and the punchlines in that play. And it was very like, okay, I'm falling back in love with this, but am I just falling in love with being the center of attention? And then so Proof was like a really nice thing of that. That's like it's a Pulitzer Prize winning play. It's like an incredible script. And it was like only four people in the cast. And that is like, okay, well, let's test if I actually like acting or if I just like attention. Mm. And turns out I like both. And so then, in the sort of interim 10 years where I wasn't acting, I did do some directing of more like film sort of stuff rather than theatre. But yeah, I was like, well, hey, let's see if this love continues to just theatre as a whole, even if, you know, the spotlight is on me, so to speak. And no, it's been fantastic. It's been a great experience. And I think the whole, it's for first time directors as well. I should mention the other two as well. So we've got Carolyn, who's directing Narayan's scene, and then Brinna Kumar, who is directing the first scene, and Carleen Craig, who is doing the last one. So Narayan and I are in the middle of the four. And yeah, it's a nice sort of way to dip your feet in. You're like, we're really supported. Each of the directors have these mentors who are sort of helping us along, not, you know, telling us how to direct, but more how to navigate the bureaucracy of doing something.
Bureaucracy like this, and drama and
yeah, which has been really good. And then it's also nice as well for, like, we've got a lot of first-time actors in the cast as well, people that have always wanted to give theatre a go, but, you know,
great.
Like a smaller role in one of four scenes is a much smaller time commitment and things like that. And so, yeah, we've got some, like, really, really talented people that this is the first play they've ever done, and I think they're enjoying it. And, like, it seems like they're gonna come back for more. But, yeah, it's cool as well to... Like that's one of the coolest parts of it, isn't it? Like, I feel like it's an environment that encourages kind of new talent, and that's what, like, the four directors, why they wanted four first-time directors as well.
Yeah, fantastic.
How have you found the transition from, like, either doing directing on screen or, like, acting on stage to now directing?
Like... It's interesting. Like, I feel like and I found this when I moved from acting to directing as well, and like going to some, like, I went to broadcasting school in Christchurch, and there's like a lot of directors are, like, afraid of actors. like it's true. Like, or they just don't know how to talk to them. They don't know how to engage with that process, kind of thing. But like, that's my favorite part of it. Like, I've worked with directors who are just like, you know, here's the lines, and then you come out and say them, and they're kind of, and then you're like, was that all right? And they go, yeah. And it's like, okay, sweet. And then, well, I guess we'll move next scene. But then, like, I love the, like, you know, what's my motivation on this line? And so, like, when I was casting mine, I was like, I really wanted those actors that want, like, those meaty kind of discussions about getting into the nitty gritty of, you know, the, because, like, every play has, one or two lines that you're like, what the hell does this mean?
Yeah, and so like, on when you're writing those.
Yeah, trying to, you know, get to the bottom of those sort of things is really fun. Like I, the main difference of like screen versus stage is like, I hate like blocking, and also the. I, as an actor and as a director, I have issues with this. It's funny, now I'm giving my actors the same notes I hated getting, because, you know, like, if you're doing a monologue to another person, it's like, face the audience. Mm-hmm. But it's like, that's not what you do in real life. And it's, to me, I just, like, I see it as just like, oh, this is, you're just doing this for theatre. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, you know, normally you would just put a camera in front of them, even if it's in between them. So getting over those little, allowing it to be like, for the theatre, it's kind of a funny thing, but it's like it never looks as awkward as it feels. This is the thing you just have to keep telling yourself.
Nick, tell me, because you've been directing for hundreds of years.
Not unfair. Right?
Well, a very, very long time.
Yeah, 30 years.
If you think back to when you first started directing.
Oh, God, how embarrassing would that be? Yes.
Yeah, so what kind of things do you think have organically changed, developed? Can you think of anything that's quite different now in what you do when you direct, maybe, to them?
Yeah, just how much I talk. So I've been directing 30 years, and I've been lucky to direct in London and New York and here in New Zealand at home. I talk too much when I was a young director in my 20s. And then what I realise is the more I can create context and environment, is the more the actors understand the space in which they inhabit and the nature of those people that inhabit that space. And the more I say, I trust you, use your best instinct, 99 times out of 100, the actor, whether they're a student at my school, mm-hmm. or whether they're a professional actor like Stephen Butterworth, they will make the better choice. For me to be prescriptive and to be too talky, I do enjoy a good nitty-gritty conversation, but my rule has always got to be, it must be made manifest on stage.
Yeah.
If you're having a conversation because you're pretentious, quiet in your voice. That's me talking to myself. That's not to you. Not directed at you, good sir. That's my inner monologue about how I direct. So, yeah, it's about context. It's about creating the space. It's about giving those actors as much information on day one as possible, and then letting them run with it. And then you're just side coaching.
Yeah.
And you're saying, even with, you know, young performers like Katie, you're just side coaching, you know. Yeah.
And some young performers are great at sucking up everything that you've told
yes.
them, and, you know, turning it into what it needs, and some not so. I even find sometimes with our adult actors, I've still got adult actors who have said to me in the past, why are you asking me what I think I would do? Don't you know, as the director?
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, yes, I do know, but I'm asking you, so it comes from you.
When you're working with young performers, it's interesting how much influence you can have, both explicitly and implicitly, on their performances. But when you're working with professional adult actors, you have very little influence, because they come as a product. You know, I worked most recently with Stephen Butterworth on a play, and Amy Cotter on Oleana, and they know their craft. They know they are well practiced. I don't need to say a huge amount, you know, with the three of us having a conversation, but with a young performer like Katie, who is a sponge to everybody and everyone who influences her, she makes some amazing choices.
There you go. Let's jump back to you, Katie. What do you think to date has been your favourite experience or performance or role?
Oh, my goodness. I think my favourite role, because it was probably most out of my depth and the most challenging but also the most rewarding, was probably The Witch in Into the Woods. It's just such a good role. So, I enjoy characters like those where there's a lot to it. Although recently, I think one of my favourite roles that's a bit more on the funny side, I had to play a pig in our like end of year dance show, but it was based on the book Animal Farm, and I was playing the pig, but like almost in drag in the end. So that was like quite a, you know, two ends of the spectrum.
Can I just say that I can't see that without a lot of makeup and costumes?
I was in like 6-inch heels, wig, ears, like it was, I was death dropping all of it was pretty crazy. But yeah, I think those two, like, for totally different reasons.
For those that don't know Animal Farm, the pig is Napoleon, isn't it? Who's the authoritative figure?
The one with the death dropping and
exactly as George Orwell wrote. Based on the famous book by George Orwell, who wrote 1984.
So, and so for you, because as you've said, you've been dancing, you've been doing musicals and things. Musicals is, or do you get into doing plays, straight plays as well?
Oh, I love doing plays as well. Yeah, no, I think acting is definitely my favourite thing out of the three disciplines. I mean, it's kind of like the fundamental thing of everything. If you're, I think being an actor is probably...
I think what was the loveliest thing, so I was in the UK with Katie for some of her drama school auditions, and to give credit to the girl, she got into every drama school she applied to, including the scholarships. She won't say it, she's too humble. I'm not, I'm a proud dad.
Except you got a t-shirt.
Absolutely. But the day, I mean, Guildford is a fantastic school, along with Artstead and Mountview, they're the three top schools. If you look at a West End programme for a musical, half the cast will come from one of those three schools. You know, Bill Nighy went there, Brenda Bledin, Celia Imrie, host of Oscar nominated actors. But what was I going to say? Yeah, when you came out during the dance sequence, what was so nice, the people, the guides, the students that were taking Katie around and the other students around on the day said, God, during the dance, you were just so animated. You were so performing. You were so acting the dance. Whereas everyone else in the dance audition were very
dancers.
Much focused on what they were doing, step, body. You know, they were very aware. And Katie wasn't. She was, because she's an actor at heart. She wouldn't tell you that.
That's why you brought Dad with you.
Yeah, this is
exactly.
True.
Yeah.
So, what do you think? Are you going to be, like, are you staying with family over there? Or are you in a hall of residence? Or what's happening when you go away?
So, the good thing about GSA is it's pretty much the only drama school over in London, UK, that actually has halls, because it's connected to the University of Surrey. So, I will be staying in halls, which is really lucky, but... all the other drama schools I got into, you just have to find your own accommodation, which was another reason why Guildford was so appealing, because there was actually a place to live. So, yeah.
And it definitely makes a difference. Have you lived away from home before?
Well, I was, when I was in London just now, back in February, I was by myself for probably 2 months, 2.5 months, being by myself, which was pretty crazy straight out of high school. In a different, whole nother country on the other side of the world. But, yeah, I think it was good to be by myself, because I think it's hopefully somewhat prepared me for...
I'm going to be around. So I've got a year sabbatical, so I'll be over there in London for most of the year. So I'll be...
Around.
Yeah. A break glass in case of emergency, maybe.
Yeah.
Nice. Now, you're going to perform for us tonight.
I am.
You are. Yes. Should we do it now?
Oh, okay.
Do you feel ready? I just threw that at you and said, now... But that's what you do, right? So tell us about the song that you're performing.
So the song I'm performing is the first song that is in the fundraiser on Tuesday. It's called When I Look at You, and it's from the musical The Scarlet Pimpernel. And it's one of the songs I used for my drama school audition. So I thought, how fitting.
Beautiful. Now, are you going to stand up?
It would be good to stand up.
Stand up?
Yeah.
All right. So we'll pull that microphone up. Yep. Totally.
We'll find out if I'm actually warmed up enough now.
Oh, I'm sure you are. So I'm going to turn us off. Can you?
Can I?
Video?
Oh, yeah, I can video.
That would be amazing.
No pressure.
Lovely. So I'm going to hit us off and we'll get this playing. I think it's got a bit of a pause at the start. Yeah. We'll see how we go.
What I always see is the face of someone else who once belonged to me. Still, I can hear him laugh, and even though that melody plays on, he's gone. When I look at you, standing there, I can almost breathe him in like summer in the air. Why do you smile his smile that heaven night forgotten is? me once more with all the love you felt before. If you and I could disappear into the past and find
we've got snaps, we've got claps, we've got everything going on.
Fantastic. That was so good. I see what you mean about, like, I mean, obviously you can't hear it necessarily, but, like, the performance you were talking about, that it's like, yeah, you were acting during that. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, Katie was very fortunate. She won the Westlake. Was that the song you sang to win the Westlake soloist competition?
Yeah, yeah.
So the Westlakes have got a pretty phenomenal music department at both schools. And there was any soloist, instrumentalist, vocalist could perform. And there were some really talented kids that performed. And Katie won that competition. That was the first big thing. He won as kind of, and we were watching, we were just proud parents, and it was like, when you won,
he didn't expect it.
It's like, sorry, I was like, oh, he has all these opera singers, and that pianist is amazing. Like, they're being mentored by someone from the NZSO. Is like, and the winner was Katie Brown. It's like, oh, whoa! It was one of those lovely, one of those wonderful nights. It was unexpected and glorious. So yeah.
Do Nairi and Richard? Do either of you have children that are performers? Like, is your daughter into acting at all, Nairi?
No, well, you could say they're all performers, but no, not professionals, and no, they don't get into community theatre, but we're a fairly self-entertaining family, so, you know, at any stage one of us might burst into song, although after hearing that, we may never sing again. Oh. but yes, I always say that, you know, if, you know, I'm an okay singer, if I drink, I'm a much better singer, but if you drink as well, I'm fantastic. You know?
That's a good way to look at it, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But no, I don't, yeah, no, self-entertaining is how I describe it.
I actually love that description because, you know, when you think of, I mean, I grew up with grandparents who you performed whenever they clapped their hands, they were like, you perform now.
Absolutely.
But the dress-ups and things, like my grandmother used to get us all dressed up and we'd have to go out and do little skits.
out from behind the curtains, the lounge curtains, yep. You came with your hairbrush and, you know, and off you went.
Actually, funny enough, my sister and I, when we were kids, we would get my parents to pay to watch us sing Christmas songs. It's like, it was our Christmas concert in our kitchen. We had this big kitchen. So it'd be like a gold coin. That was like our pocket money, I guess. Mm. And so they would pay to watch us perform in their own house. And they'd have to put up, we'd invite all their friends. And they would have to put on like a $100 cheese board for them. And then we'd still make my parents pay. And so, yeah, that's hustling from the start. Really.
Well, I was just going to say.
You should be a producer.
Entrepreneur there.
Yeah, I'm not letting him anywhere near my grandkids. I'm not paying.
You're not paying to watch them perform? No.
They need to perform for free for their nanny.
Fair enough. And were you performing from a very young age, Richard? Like, where did it start for you? Were you performing for your grandparents?
Well, I always been kind of craving attention and whatnot. Like, I think probably all of us in this room, let's be honest. But I remember like making little radio shows and stuff like that. Like, we had a little rudimentary microphone. And like, there's old cassette tapes somewhere of me and my sister making these little radio shows. But,
early podcasts.
Yeah. Predating the internet. Mm. I'm not that old, actually. Yeah, that's probably like the first like performing I remember before, school plays and things like that.
Mm.
Do you guys get on stage for musicals then?
Yeah, I did.
What show did you do?
No. It wasn't like that. It wasn't like that at all. No, I quit my job in 2009, and I thought, what am I going to do? And I'd written an email, a goodbye email to everybody at work, you know, and sent that out and said, you know, I'm going home to figure out what I want to be when I grow up. You know, I want to be an air hostess. Unfortunately, I'd probably throw the first rude person off the plane at 10,000 feet, so probably not a great idea. I'd also like to be a famous actress. Unfortunately, you know, I'd have to have millions of dollars worth of liposuction to fit into any dress to get down the, you know, red carpet. And I'd also like to be a famous singer. And then I said, you know, I'd have to drink, you'd have to drink, and I'd be fine. But then I saw, after that, I saw an audition, and I thought, you know, I've written this email a month ago. I need to have a go. So onto the stage I got at Howick Little Theatre, and onto the stage I got at Harlequin Musical Theatre. Oh. So just a little, you know, nothing big, just community theatre, and it's fabulous.
At the end of the day, community theatre, though, is, you know, it's all about joy. It's all about doing.
It's all about participating and having a go. You know?
And for a lot of people in community theatre, it's because they've got, I'm going to say in quotation marks, day jobs, and potentially can't do the full-time gig.
Absolutely. You're absolutely correct with that. And yeah, it's a lot of fun, and everybody's doing it for love, not for money. You know, there's not one, they're all volunteers, and they do a fabulous job. Yeah, the magic doesn't happen without the volunteers, quite frankly.
Mm. Now, you saying about needing to drink to be that little bit better, there is a segue, I'm saying it for a reason, I promise. I was going to say, anyone coming to see London Suite should remember, because I always push this at the Dolphin, and Mike may have told you that it's my favourite thing, that we have Tuesday treats when you come on a Tuesday to the Dolphin, of course you get your drink on arrival, and you get your ice cream at halftime.
What?
Yeah. I think that's a pretty cool deal. So pay your ticket price, and it's Tuesday treats. And then on a Wednesday, you've got the Wednesday wheel. Are they still doing the Wednesday wheel?
They are still doing the Wednesday wheel. I mean, you're running through all the talking points.
All the talking points you had. So the Wednesday wheel means what can you win on the wheel?
It might change from time to time, but I'll say very assorted prizes.
Right.
Tickets to other shows, ice creams, and various sort of things. But yeah, no, it's that's the Spin the Wheel Wednesday. But Yeah, I mean, I can do the sort of the
do
plug
it.
Now.
Do me
like.
The plug.
So,
give it away. Surreptitiously.
Yeah, so this is, yeah, so London Suite, we open on the 20th of June, so just under 2 weeks.
Oh, wow.
On
yep.
Friday night. And then, yeah, matinee, we run through till the 5th of July. Matinees on Sundays. So a nice 2 p.m. performance for those people that don't want to, you know, go to the theatre on a school night. And no Monday shows, but yeah. Tuesday treats, I would highly recommend. It ends up being like Tuesday kind of is like the fun crowd because, you know, they got a little bit of bubbles in them. And, yeah, your jokes are all a little bit funnier. Like,
and I love yeah, that really. Dolphin Theatre, I think, is still one of the community theatres that you go to where they have tea, coffee and biscuits at halftime.
Oh,
I love that you come out at halftime and there's tea and coffee. Yep. They need to introduce some gluten-free biscuits for people like me, though.
I will pass on that feedback. But, yeah, also, in addition to all of these wonderful extras, you also get a fabulous night of theatre.
And it is a gorgeous theatre to perform, and Nick's performed there as well. Mm-hmm. I love the Dolphin as a more intimate space.
And Neil Simon, fantastic writer, Pulitzer Prize winner, and also yeah. you wrote The Odd Couple, you know, the Walter Matthau, Jack Lemmon, a TV show that came from that play, and also he wrote Barefoot in the Park, one of my favourite movies, actually, Jane Fonda, Robert Redford, and he wrote the book for Promises, Promises, and for Sweet Charity. So he's got a musical connection there as well. He's a fabulous writer. Mm. So he died not that long, about 15 years ago. But yeah, awesome
yeah,
American
Suite
writer.
Was one of his latest. It was like 96.
Which was, sorry?
London Suite, yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's about 20 years after California Suite, which is, yeah, one of those quite sort of notable ones, but it has the same sort of setup of that as that.
Yeah. Clever guy.
Now your turn to pitch your fundraiser for us, Katie. Tell us where they can get tickets, when, etc.
So tickets are already selling now. You can find them on the link on the Pump House. They are only $10 to $15, so they're super cheap. So please come.
$15 for waged, $10
yeah,
for unwaged.
Yeah. It starts at 7:30, and it's only a one-act show, so if you've got kids, it's not too much. It's not a late night or anything.
And are you going to have donation buckets out as well if people want to
yeah,
support
can we pay more for our tickets?
Oh, bless you, Candy. We're actually putting together a Give a Little page. So
great.
that's going to be part of the process as well. And there'll be reminiscences. There's a Q&A section as well. So the 8 performers in the cast, you can ask them a question at the kind of the halfway mark of the show about what's it like to audition for shows, you know, what's your favourite role. So there's a good bit of audience interaction. And there's monologues as well.
Like
absolutely, yeah.
And so on. And we'll definitely offer 2 double passes to come and see the show as well. So
oh, great.
If you can, and the question's very simply, can you remember the show that Katie mentioned, the role and the show she mentioned earlier on that was her kind of her favourite role? So if you can remember that, then you can get a double pass. No, you can't. Richard's leaning in.
But she did mention 2.
Ah, then either of those would be acceptable.
Right.
Well, yeah.
Just want to clarify the rules, that's all.
Thank you. thank you for that clarification, kind Richard.
And should we clarify, so their messaging kick arts?
Or yes, if that's, yes, please.
Yes, so I will put that's fine. I will put the information up about the competition on Kick Arts website after the show, so you can message us, or, you know, we've got a phone here, 815-8100, if you want to ring in to win this competition. We've never had a phone call in the studio before.
Oh.
So it might be trouble. Yeah. I'll work out Stephen's how to answer it.
In, yeah.
So that's 09-815-8100 if you want to ring in and win these tickets to Katie's fundraiser. Tuesday night's my night off, so that means that I can come along. So I'll be there definitely.
You can have a free ticket, whatever.
I don't need a free ticket. I need to support. The money is going to Katie. I'm being cut.
Well,
I know you're all these free tickets.
Yeah. Well, Katie, we wish you all the best for the fundraiser, but obviously for your time overseas.
Thank
and do stay in touch with us when you come home. We quite often interview our performers overseas. We just had an episode a few weeks ago from New Zealand and Australian performance. And of course, thinking of like Michael and Emma Self from who were at Bird, you know, we did interviews with them from Bird. So, you know, we can do phone calls and pre-record, so we do want to hear from you.
A little tidbit, actually. So Doreen Bird is a very good dance school. They have a musical theatre course as well, and that's one of the courses that Katie might have auditioned for but didn't. Claire, my wife, was a dancer, and she was actually taught by Doreen Bird.
There you go.
She was very small, very young, but Doreen Bird was one of her first dance teachers. So, yeah, quite
a
scary lady.
All the best, everyone get along and support on Tuesday at the Pump House. And 2 weeks to go for you guys. We wish you all the best for London Suite. We will be along as well. So we look forward to seeing that, either Stephen or myself. And we'll see you next time you're doing something and you come in and hopefully I'll be sitting here in the studio. So now we are playing from Meg Theron. It's her new track called Golden.
Sky, find a way anew. Through the darkest mystery, I see a light in you. In the echoes of our dreams, our shadows dance away. I hold you close, forever bound to every word you say. The sunrise so bright, forever lost again. Gentle feeling of the warmth pressing against my skin. Losing breath from a glance you take away. In your arms, a universe, I wish I could forever stay.
That was a bit funny, wasn't it, when I'm busy talking to the new guests and I don't turn off the track.
We just had that moment of like, dead air!
Dead air. Well, it wasn't dead air. They got a touch of an ad, which I think was a BNZ ad. So there you go, BNZ. You got some free advertising from us.
Yeah, you're welcome, BNZ.
Yeah. Well, what an amazing guest. But we're jumping straight onto the phone now with another very talented past Kickouts guest as well, I must say. So, kia ora and good evening, Cassandra. How are you?
Hello, I'm good, thank you.
So it's a Sunday evening and you're probably looking forward to a week ahead, but have we start? When does the show start?
So, 15th of June, so next Sunday. This time next Sunday, yep, I'll be on stage.
So have you had rehearsals today or are you only rehearsing during the week at the moment?
Oh, look, it's a matter of just fitting them in at the moment and just sort of, because I've been touring since last year, it's pretty solid in there, I would hope, by this stage. I did about 50 performances last year and have been touring all this year as well. So, it's pretty locked in now, which is good. But I'm looking forward to just getting in the room this week and freshening things up a bit.
Cool. Yeah, I was just going to say, when you've been doing something, because is this, I'm just trying to remember, is it 2 or 3 years since you started this?
This is the second year, but it's also been picked up for Arts on Tour next year. So it's the play that does not end for me, but I'm so happy to carry the torch for it. It's an immense gift.
So when you've been performing something for this long, tell us what is... Has it changed much? Does it change? Or is it a case of it's pretty locked in and it stays the same?
No, it changes all the time. And, you know, obviously, as you guys know, live theatre, it's, you know, you can never rest on your laurels because it's live. So, you know, the nerves are always there. The uncertainty is always there of what if something goes wrong. But that never kind of goes away. But it does continue to deepen, particularly with this show because of just the people I meet throughout the journey and throughout the country of who share their stories with me, and it just continues to deepen the story. I'm just always like we're doing Q&As after each event, after each show. And this year particularly, we've been doing a lot of school, free shows for high school students and university students. So just learning so much about the advocacy of the play around the legal system, around sexual harm. And so all those things sort of filter into the performance itself. So it just continues to deepen as I continue to learn more about the themes of the play.
So for someone that maybe hasn't heard about what this play is or what it's actually about, you've just hinted to some of it there, but give us a really short snapshot, sell it to us. What is the play all about?
Oh, look, it's so I play a criminal defence barrister, Tessa, who's raised, you know, she's brought herself up from the from a working class background to become a top criminal defence barrister at the top of her game, and loves the law and has devoted her whole life to it, believes in the law so much. And then an incident happens where she becomes a victim of the law in the same and so faces the law from a different perspective, and really sees all the things she was maybe blinded to beforehand, and sees the holes in the system, and sees how things need to change, and then really finds her voice as an advocate for what she's been through. So, yeah.
So you've been touring, and then next week you're on at the Pump House?
Yes. So we're doing a double header, actually, with Michael Hirst. One-man show, The Golden Ass.
So when people come, they get to see both shows?
They can do. They can book for one or both. We just thought it was a really interesting dynamic to have two solo shows. He obviously directed Prima Facie, so it's an interesting experience for audiences to go to something he's directed but then also see him perform. And we love the idea of just the two solo shows, you know, one being a drama and one being a comedy, but both showing the, you know, the sides of the theatre mask that we all know and love, and you know, considering they're both, they're plays that are 2,000 years apart, but they actually really explore sexual politics in some similar ways. So it's a really interesting lineup to see back to back.
And then is that the end of the tour for this section, or is there more after Pump House?
No, I go to New Plymouth in July, and then I think we've got a few kind of scattered school shows throughout the end of the year that will, you know, I always try and add in a few public performances around those as well. But that's I think we're possibly going to Waiheke again as well. But yeah, at the moment it's Auckland and then New Plymouth. So it's been on the road since the beginning of the year though. So it's nice to kind of spread it out. And I'm looking forward to the Pump House again because that was where I opened it last year. So I feel very special to be taking it back there. And
I just packed out of there last night, and your face was very much all over the place on your posters. So we knew that you were there, and it was the Pump House is definitely ready to rock for you.
Thank you! I can't wait. It's one of my favourite venues. It's so quaint, and I love it.
Is it quite hard when you're working on a show and then you only do like a performance once every month or a couple of months? Is it hard to kind of get back into the swing of it? Do you set yourself up for like the week beforehand? What's kind of that process?
Yeah, I do. I like I'm always running lines, not just for the lines themselves, but just to really keep the story alive and myself and deepen things. Like I was saying, you know, I'm always just thinking about aspects of it and deepening it and thinking, you know, I try and set intentions each time, like to, you know, to keep it fresh for myself and the audience. But you know, I'm always, I actually really love, you know, I love that I've always got this kind of going on, because it's always something I kind of am ticking away on, which is such a gift as an artist to be able to have sort of cut something consistent, because I think what I find so hard sometimes is we put so much work into things and then they're over in a couple of weeks or so I feel really lucky that I can't, this is just continuing, because it's enabled me to just continue to live with it and deepen it and just keeping my voice, you know, voice and stamina up. And I try and run the lines while I run at the gym, just to try and increase my stamina, because I was so inspired whenever I go to New York or overseas and see the Broadway actors that are doing like eight shows a week, and I think, far out, like, how do they maintain their stamina, and I'm so inspired by that, and you know, so still taking little hacks from them, and yeah, I really love doing that. So
fabulous. Well, we wish you all the best for the season, and look forward to catching you up maybe when you're doing Arts on Tour next year, and to hear more about how it's all going.
Lovely. Thank you for having me again.
No worries at all. Have a good rest of your Sunday night.
Thank you. Bye.
Ka kite. Wow. What a long time to be working on a show. But get along to the Pump House. We'll be putting all that information up. Speaking of the Pump House, our next guests are going to be performing at the Pump House as well. So I'd love to welcome from Foolish Wit Theatre, Gabby and Dick. Kia ora.
Kia ora.
Thank you for having us.
No worries at all. So first of all, tell us a little bit about the Doll's House.
So, A Doll's House, we're actually doing the Amy Herzog adaptation of A Doll's House, which was originally written by Henrik Ibsen in the late 1800s. So this is just a little bit more of a sort of a modern adaptation of it, and just making it a little bit more relevant to a modern day audience. So it essentially follows the story of Nora Helmer.
Who you're playing?
Who I am playing, yes.
A starring role.
Many a famous actress has played
absolutely
that role.
Absolutely,
yes,
yeah.
Definitely.
It sounded like I was joking, but I meant it seriously, yeah, for sure.
So it follows Nora Helmer and her seemingly content life as a wife and a mother. And she has this really big secret that she is desperately trying not to get brought to light. And so the play follows this big secret coming out and how that changes her perspective on her relationship, her marriage, what she wants out of her life, and where she sees her life going in the next few years.
Okay, and tell us about your role.
Oh my God, I get to play the villain, and oh my God, it's so fun. I love it. It's very off-brand for me, maybe, who knows. But I enjoy, so I play Niels Krogstad. I am a, you're turning my mic down, I respect that. I'm a loud person, that's fair.
No, and look, at least we can hear you.
No, I get it. Yeah, for sure. No, I play a crooked loan shark who is trying to, I think there's an undertone of understanding from him, but ultimately he's just bitter at the world.
Oh.
And I quite like that.
So that's not like you in real life at all?
Not at all. No, I'm a very joyous person and not bitter at all.
See, I'm trying to like read if there's sarcasm.
I'm finding it really hard to tell.
It's like, I'm not bitter at all. I'm looking at you, Steve.
Stop it. It's like,
ooh. So good. I think, no, it's such a beautiful play to be doing at the moment, particularly with New Zealand society as it is, with the current government that we have and the patriarchal sort of lens that the play puts against the characters, but also how the audience can reflect on how it plays in modern day society. Mm. You know, the current news stories of pay equity claims, or you look at Jacinda Ardern's latest book tour and whatever, and the evil commentary online. I think it's a very relevant play to be putting on at the moment, and I appreciate being a part of it.
So who do you think is kind of a target audience for this play? Is it anyone, or do you think, like, would younger people get it, do you think?
Yeah, I think that it can attract a very general public of audience. I think that anyone can watch any kind of live theatre and be able to take a learning lesson from it. So, I mean, there's many lessons to learn within A Doll's House, and I think it's definitely a good conversation starter. You're not just watching a piece of theatre for the sake of it. I think it really teaches you a lot of, you know, lessons and a lot of questions to maybe ask yourself.
Mm. I remember seeing it a few years ago when Auckland Theatre Company did it, and they had their great big pool of soft toy panda bears.
Oh my gosh.
Like, that was their set. It was literally like this big swimming pool in the middle of the stage full of soft toys.
Wow.
It was, I can't actually remember off the top of my head what that social commentary was, but yeah, it was part of it. But it was very unusual.
Wow, I wish I'd seen that.
Get them to write in, you know? We need to know why the pandas were there.
Yeah.
Ours has gone for, so the set design for ours, we've gone for Gordy. That's right. That's the prompt that the set designer has been working towards. You know, it's very timeless, but of an era of decoration for the sake of decoration.
Extravagance,
right. And on the Pump House stage, I'm just trying to envisage. Well, mine, you're lucky at the Pump House, though, because you've got that beautiful brick wall.
Oh, my God.
Which, when you
so
clear
beautiful.
The curtains and the tabs back mm-hmm. and they expose all that brick, it actually makes for a really great...
I've never been there before until about 3 weeks ago. What a beautiful space. Mm. We should be using that all the time. I mean, we do, but yeah, what a beautiful space.
So does that mean potentially that this is your first show with Foolish Wit?
My first scripted theatre piece ever.
Oh my goodness. So what
imagine?
Made you decide to audition to be in a show?
I think so. I come from an improvised comedy background, and I think there was something very curious about go on.
No, I'm just excited to see where this goes.
Oh, sure. Okay. No, that's fine. Thank you for that. I really appreciate a chance to express a different emotion. I think comedy's fun. I love it. Like, one of my happy spaces. But there's something, like, the world's not very funny right now.
Right.
And it's, you're allowed to be sad, and you're allowed to be angry, and you're allowed to be many other things. And I think that was a very big... Also, I feel so lucky at the cast that I'm working with. We have got some amazing actors. I feel very blessed. A very fun foray into acting for me, I think.
So was your improvised comedy historically here in Tamaki Makaurau, or where did you do that? So...
Am I shouting out people? I was based at the Covert Theatre. I worked there for 5 years,
right,
which did lots of fun different productions and plays, improvised plays. Was very fun. And then did bits at, the Wine Cellar. Rest in peace, the Wine Cellar. We miss it, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's a very nice change of pace for me, and I'm enjoying it. Although... I'm not enjoying learning lines.
I was just about to ask that. I was like, how is learning lines?
Oh, my God, it's not fun.
Yeah.
Nobody tells you that. Everyone's like, oh, do acting, it'll be fun. It was a new facade. No, it's hard.
Yeah.
Do you find learning lines hard, Gabby?
It is challenging. I think I kind of have a knack for it now. It takes a while to kind of figure out what your way of learning is. Mm. And once you kind of have that down, it becomes easier. Like, I will record the script, the other people's lines, and then I will learn to say that over, and I'll just be driving around in my car and I'll put that on play and just talk to myself for an hour.
Because that's often, I find, the biggest thing as a director is when the cast come out in and their book's down and they're like, but I know my lines. And it's like, I know you know your lines, but you haven't learnt the lines before and after your lines. So you keep missing your cues and then you forget which line you're up to.
Yeah.
So doing what you've just said by recording, getting someone to record all the other parts, so you're getting used to where it comes and ebbs and flows.
We were actually just talking about this earlier. We were talking about the process of learning lines. And I was saying how you get so used to your own voice saying these other characters' lines, and then suddenly you're in rehearsal and you're like, yes, I've got these lines down, like I was doing them perfectly in my bed an hour ago. And then suddenly, suddenly you're listening to the other person, the real actor playing this character.
Well, and different inflection 100%. And different pitch and pace.
Yeah.
And it's not the way you're used to hearing it.
Exactly.
So your brain doesn't register.
Yeah. So it takes a while to kind of, step into that level of comfortability where it's just so easy and it just flows right off the tongue.
And I think for some people too, Patrick, you might agree with this, it's that once you get blocked as well, so for me, I then learn to associate what I'm physically doing with the words. So I find it very hard to remember when we're just line bashing. Mm. Whereas when I'm actually physically doing...
Is that a technical term, line bashing? Like, do people use that? And I love
a
that.
A line bash, yeah.
Stop. So good.
You've never heard of that saying?
Line new to theatre. Line bashing. I love that.
Line bashing's literally where you sit there and you like do a run of your lines with no action. You do it full speed and it's just like blah, 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 blah. Let's just quickly run the scene. Let's bash those lines. Da, 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 and then you go and do it. Speed read.
Yeah, I when we were talking about it before and everyone was like, oh, it's so good coming off book. I was like, never. I couldn't. It just doesn't get in there until there's something that I can associate the blocking to it.
Coming off book's really scary too. Like, I'm one of those people that I keep holding it for longer and longer and longer. 100%. But actually, if you throw it away and make lots of mistakes, you do learn very fast because there's only so many times that you're going to deal with the director going, no!
Exactly. Yeah. It's
Who is your director?
Comfort blanket. We have the lovely James Bell from Foolish Wit Theatre. Yes.
Hello, James. You're probably listening.
We love you, James.
Listen, your cast love you. I love James too because he came to our rescue last night. He came running around the corner
when I was
at the pump house.
Packing out.
No, it was before we were packing out.
Oh, yeah.
What a hero. Uh-huh.
He is a hero. I love James.
Yeah.
We haven't had his email tonight of the theatre list yet, but I bet you guys are on the theatre list at the moment.
What's the theatre list, please?
Oh, my goodness, James. You need to educate your cast.
No.
So the theatre list is James's little project that he has where you he sends out an email if you're subscribed every Sunday of everything that's going on in Auckland. And it's a theatre list of Tamaki Makaurau and what shows are on.
Is it all over Auckland?
Mm-hmm.
Why do I not know about
so
that?
So you can register. Here you go, James. I'm selling
what
you.
What a plug.
The theatre list and you subscribe to it and every Sunday between 8 and 10 o'clock at night you get an email that basically says here's what's going on.
That's great.
So there you go.
No, that's the more you know.
So cone of silence because James isn't here to throw anything at you. Tell us how you're finding, well it's quite different for you too even having a director. So how are you finding him as a director?
It's great. I thought... Here's my curveball. I thought there'd be more.
Direction?
Yeah. Oh. I thought I'd be like rolling in the deep of direction, you know? Like I thought I'd be taught how to do every single little. Mm-hmm. But it's sort of, you know, go at it and then we'll correct it if it's wrong or correct if it's not.
Did you hear
vision.
Us talking about that before with our past guests? Because Richard and Nick were talking about that and that whole thing of not saying too much so that it's authentic and comes from the floor.
Sure. Which is a lot of faith to put in your actors. I think it's great. Sure, it's great. But I couldn't direct because I'd want to be telling people what to be doing the whole time. You know?
Fair enough. And what about you? Is this your first time working with James?
No, I have been lucky enough to work with James quite a few times now. So we have a pretty good working relationship. And he's such a great director to work with because, pretty similar to what Dex said. James really gives you that freedom to come in and put your own twist on things and really find that character development. And he's definitely there as a guide. He's not a micromanager, so shout out to James.
Fantastic.
What do you prefer?
Oh, I definitely think, I mean, I suppose because I'm an educator and have been a teacher for so many years, to me, it has to be authentically from the person acting. There's no point in me saying, and now you walk three steps and you wave your hand and please raise your voice there, because otherwise that's how I would do it.
Yeah.
And so then it's not authentic on the stage. It's not believable.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and it needs to come from, it does need to come from within. And yes, sometimes, obviously, all directors are going to go, oh, that wasn't quite, well, can you try this?
Uh-huh.
But as long as there's a reason for it, you know, I think it's really important.
I've been told off a couple of times because I've been given direction and I go, no, I don't want to do that.
Stop.
It's not so coldly. It would just be a bit like, I don't see why I would do that and let's have a discussion.
If there's a discussion, that's fine. But if an actor looked at me and said, no, I don't want to do that, I'd probably tell you where to go.
That's so good.
So tell us though, Gabby, tell us a little bit about your story. Why did you audition for The Doll's House? Was it because of it was Foolish Wit or was it The Doll's House?
you know what? It was probably a combination of both. I already had this great relationship with Foolish Wit and also with the Pump House Theatre. And I also studied acting at Unitech. I did a 3-year bachelor's degree. And while we were there, we actually studied A Doll's House already. So I had, you know, my own kind of opinion and feelings about the play already. I knew what I was going into. It's just such a relevant play. And I'll never get tired of doing that one. It's a real privilege to play Nora as well. Mm. Yeah, she is such an interesting character. She's very layered, I would say. I kind of can't tell whether I love her or I hate her. It's a bit of both.
But that's good, because you don't want to play a character that's innately one level, do you?
Yeah.
That's not very challenging.
No, she's so great. She's so multi-layered. And the whole time she's kind of manipulating other people within the play to kind of get her way. And then you sort of realise that she's had this costume on. She's an actor in her own story, and she has this costume on and she doesn't even realise it. And she literally just wakes up one day and realises that she's an actor and she doesn't even know who she is. So it's a real interesting journey to go on and kind of, just watch her figure things out.
And it's a really relatable journey for a lot of people, right? That sort of, you wake up one morning and sort of think, wait, why am I doing these things that have been told to me as, oh, this is how my life should be. I should be betrothed to this person. I should be friends with this person. I should go to this place to eat or whatever. But you actually reflect and you can, the beautiful part of the play is Nora's realization of, oh, no, I actually don't want any of this. This is all what's been told to me by the system, in smaller words. I think that's a really satisfying for an audience member and a cast member to be able to see that light bulb moment of, oh, I didn't want this. I don't think I ever wanted this.
So how many people are in the play?
There are 6 of us, so it's actually
it's quite small, really, isn't it?
Yeah. It's really nice. You have really good relationships with people, and it makes it quite a lot more intimate. Just easier to kind of, I don't know, work on that kind of actor chemistry that you have on stage, because it does transfer.
And in this adaptation, I'm assuming, because you said there's only 6, the kids aren't in it.
Well, they are, but we actually have voiceovers for the kids, so they are going to be invisible off stage, but we just recorded them today, so you'll be hearing them on the speakers.
Shout out to our assistant director, Tanit, who is the one who sourced the children and recorded them today.
I don't know how to say that.
Hey, children, come report them.
I was just going to say, did she grab them from down by the lake? Like, from the duck, from the
like
duck
feeding
pound?
Ducks.
Yeah.
Bringing them into the theatre.
No, I think these kids were like dying to be there.
Oh, they actually wanted to be voiceovers.
Absolutely. What a great foray into acting, you know?
It's exciting for them because they can actually have on their CV that they were the voiceover in A Doll's House at the Pump House Theatre. Yeah. So why not?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
What a cool way to do it. It's pretty cool to be 6 years old and already really been in a play.
I have an acting credit. Well, I mean, it's no Blue Ivy Carter, but it's near enough.
How do you prepare going to your improv life? How do you prepare for an improvised piece? Is there anything you guys rehearse? Or do you just go out there and go, let's see what happens?
Yeah, it's very not that. And I think that is the fear of people who go and see improv, is that it's thrown together at the... There is a lot more... based on the improvised pieces that I've done, I think there is a lot more relationship building and understanding where you want how you want the characters and the story to flow. Mm-hmm. I think there is a definite misconception that it's going to be some sort of fast fire, whose line is it anyway type.
Yeah.
That's what I was just going to say. Is it long form improvisation, or is it like short, quick theatre sports?
Because it's quite different. I love theatre sports. Like, I think some of the funnest, shout out to some of the improv troupes that do short form improv around Auckland, because there are some really fun shows around. But I think that there is a real joy in a cast that is clearly well molded and know how they are going, crafted rather than molded. I used molded there, but I don't think that was right. But I think there is a real joy. So shout out to the Mischief Improv Company, who are doing their show Potluck Dinner at the Vic. That I'm not supposed to be promoting other projects, but
that's totally fine. That's cool.
Okay, great.
Go for it.
Yeah, no, they've got an amazing cast, and that is all set at a dinner party between friends, and so the entire show is set for 1 hour based upon the conversations that you might have at this improvised potluck dinner. So good.
Steve and I used to do a similar thing. We used to have a show called A Fishy Business 25 years ago at Corbin's Wine Estate. Yeah, and it was a scripted play, the first half. It's about a husband and wife and their child and da-da-da-da. And then the second half of the show was like a Fawlty Towers, where we went, where the whole audience was suddenly at our dinner and we did things. Yeah. I loved it. It was such a great,
Would you do it again?
Oh, yeah. We every now and then pull it out, you know.
Sure.
Mary and George, who Stephen and my characters sometimes. We turn up at things every now and then.
Great.
Because did like a this is your life thing for it, where we could be hired to turn up at a function to do like a this is your life. We had the police called us on one night. We used to pull up into the driveway in a car, and he had a sunroof, and he pushed me out of the sunroof because I couldn't get out of the car, and we'd be screaming. And this particular family thought that we were some strange people in West Auckland had shown up in their driveway, so they called the police.
Yeah, oh, right.
No. But we were actually the entertainers. Yeah.
Fun work stories.
Stephen will be sitting in the hotel laughing right now. But anyway, back to you guys. So tell us, Gabby, how did acting all begin? Let's take us right back to the, I don't know, we were talking before with the past guests about performing for our grandchildren, for our grandparents, or Patrick was telling us that he used to charge his parents to listen to him singing Christmas carols.
I love that. It's pretty classic, to be honest. I think, yeah, I always just wanted to be an actor. People ask me that all the time, and I honestly, the answer is I've just always wanted to do it. I find it quite cathartic. It's quite nice to sort of step out of your own skin for a little while and step into the shoes of someone else and experience things from a completely different point of view. I think it helps you to become, you know, quite an empathetic person as well. So I think those are the real privileges of acting and being an actor. But, yeah, I will say that I was definitely the kid that would do performances at my friend's house to try and get my parents to let me have a sleepover there instead of taking me home.
I love it.
That's pretty classic, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah. And so was it something you did at school?
Yeah, so I actually grew up in Dubai in the UAE. So I wouldn't say that acting was the main focus at my school, but we still had drama. And yeah, I just loved it. We did a lot of musicals, which was pretty cool. And then I just knew I wanted to be an actor, so I decided to start applying to some drama schools, and I got into UniTech, and then, yeah, did my 3-year bachelor's degree there. Yeah, for screen and theatre. So it was pretty awesome.
Awesome. And what about you? What made you decide that standing up and getting people watching you was what you wanted to do? That sounded really dodgy.
And I'm going to make it more dodgy. No, I'm not. I'm kidding. I was, what do they call it, like a coronial, one of the coronavirus creative people.
I've never heard that saying before.
Not? No,
coronial.
Yeah, one of those people that
became creative during
COVID, during the lockdowns.
Okay.
I think it was like, oh my God, I need to do something with my life that makes me happy. And that was sort of the next logical. I mean, it was actually, I hate to be one of those people, it was like, oh, to build my confidence.
So it wasn't something that you did during your education or anything?
Oh, yeah, sure. Like, I was doing performing arts and whatever at school, but I never pursued it.
Right.
I didn't do it beyond...
Did you do a normal job for a while?
Yeah, I did many normal jobs, you know? One of those people that sort of bounces around and does whatever. I moved to New Zealand when I was 19 years old.
I was going to say there's a bit of an accent there.
Do you want to guess where?
No. You can, I'm not.
Part of me feels like it's somewhere Europe.
Okay. Oh, we're not even going to... Okay, sure.
Like, it kind of makes me kind of go, it's some kind of Englishy...
Yeah.
What are the dialect?
The North.
It's you're Northern. You're
north.
A Northern.
Yeah.
Okay. Northern man.
Yeah, I have this big poster in my room that says, we are Northern, not stupid.
Oh, okay.
What part of North then?
Yorkshire.
Oh.
Where my favourite pudding comes from.
Oh, well, it's one of the best. You know, I can't think, well, not a pudding, but yeah, I rate it. I really love
you
that.
You can't have I beef with that Yorkshire pudding.
There is so much pressure when you are invited to a dinner and somebody's like, oh, you'll do the Yorkshire puddings. That's pressure because you've got to deliver, right?
Yeah. Like, and if you don't get a big enough hole in the middle for
on
the gravy.
The rice and whatever else, there is stress there. And I think. Stop it. I think people don't realize. Like, what do you guys only have one contested dish, right? The pavlova.
Well, so, unless, no,
oh,
see,
cheese
for me,
rolls.
No, I have to say, if you're talking Yorkshire
South
pudding,
Island cheese rolls.
South Island, yes, but if you're talking Yorkshire pudding, I would actually relate it to fry bread. Because isn't it the same thing?
I just
thing?
Had one today.
But how often do you get asked to bring fry bread to a potluck dinner?
That is true.
Only if you're of the culture.
Yeah, right, and I'm not, but I do get asked to bring Yorkshire puddings. I don't think I've ever had fry bread.
Well, then you so need to good. Go out to South Auckland markets on a Sunday.
Right now.
And go and find some.
That is exactly what I did today. Went to Pukekohe Sunday markets, had a gorgy piece of fry bread.
Did you really?
I did.
Wow.
It was stunning.
And what I love about fried bread is because it can be savoury or sweet, because if you put jam in fried bread, well, then it's sweet, more like a donut.
Yeah, right.
But if you put it with your meat and gravy, well, then, you know, or into your hangi, well, then, anyway, we're educating you on
no,
the New Zealand culture right now.
I appreciate that. I mean, I've been here for, I'm not aging myself, but I've been here for a while.
Well, you said you arrived when you were 19, didn't you say that? Okay.
I guess aging.
We're not going to guess.
Quite long ahead.
I don't want to insult you.
I'm 21.
You. Oh, wow. So you've been here 2 years plus 10. It's amazing.
I have been for a while.
So were you, but you said you were part of the, what did you call it?
Coronial.
You were a coronial. Were you in New Zealand when you were a coronial?
Yeah.
Okay, so that means you're at least 23 or 24.
No, I'm 30 years old.
Oh, okay. Mm.
Yeah, awful. I still not had fry bread. I feel like I've committed a sin there. I've had a hungy.
But to be fair, and now I'm outing myself because I'm born and raised Kiwi, I don't think I've ever had fry bread.
Wow.
You guys are missing out.
There we go.
Yeah.
South Island sushi, though. Cheese rolls are where it's at.
Oh, South Island cheese rolls are amazing. Sushi.
Is that what you call it?
Yeah. No, that's what it's called.
Well, it's like sushi because it rolls up and you've got the little... I love that we're talking about arts and we're talking about food right now. We're not doing very
Jacinda
well.
Jacinda Ardern was on... Jessie Ware does a podcast called At the Table, and she was their guest promoting her book, and they talk about foods that you bring to a dinner party or whatever, and she was trying to describe the South Island sushi is what she called it, and I thought that was like the commonly used term, but apparently not.
As a Dunedin girl, I spent many it used to be the staple fundraiser for school events. You would go to the cooking room with your mums on a night and you would make dozens and dozens and dozens and put them in plastic bags and the families would have bought them. And then, like, every household in Dunedin used to have freezer loads so that when you came over after school to with a friend's place and they would just pull out the cheese rolls and put them in the oven.
Amazing.
And when I came to Auckland, I was like, and you know, I remember going to my first theatre club and they were like, right, we're going to do fundraising. And I was like, are we going to make cheese rolls? And they were like, what are you talking about? And I was like, you know, like cheese rolls. And they were like, no, we're going to sell samosas.
Samosas?
Or chocolates. Samosas is a really big fundraiser here for youth in Auckland.
Really? I missed that. I was always the Dairy Milk like the chocolate bars. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and you just eat them all and then your mum had to pay for them.
So does Foolish Wit expect cast members to fundraise?
Buy tickets to our show. Anybody listening needs to buy tickets.
That's your fundraising, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, that's the fundraising. You can buy them at pumphouse.co.nz. Just had to pop
that's
that
right.
in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, we're not expected to do fundraising, which is good. James, we've been very lucky. We've gotten a grant, which is amazing. It's such a massive help because, obviously, you know, 99% of the time, community theatre's not paid. So people that are doing it, you're really doing it for the love of it. And there's no other reason, so it's pretty cool to be able to have a bit of help there.
Now, Mr. Improviser, because we're coming to an end of the interview,
yeah.
I'm going to put it on you. I know we've just been told where to get tickets, but I would like you, in your character, to do the business end and invite people to come and see the show.
In my character? Right, okay. Well, I want to be very honest with you and explain to you that it's a duty that you have to yourself and to me, who you have betrayed in the past. And I'm explaining to you that if you do not buy tickets to our show between the 25th to the 29th of June at the Pump House Theatre, that I will tell everybody your biggest, darkest secret.
Oh.
Booking now.
Booking now.
Chills.
And what I love about performing at the Pump House, I have to say as well, is if you can't go online for whatever reason to book, they have wonderful people during the week sitting in their box office. So if you're over in Takapuna and you could go to the French Cafe and have a cup of coffee and a crepe or something at lunchtime, go and visit the geese and the ducks, and then you could book in person. So people that say, I can't book online, I don't have a credit card, there's no excuse. You can go into the Pump House.
Actually, go there. I didn't know that was a thing. You know, they do, what do they call it, like stand-up paddleboarding on the little water outside. Yeah. Yeah, so you could do that whilst you go and buy your ticket as well.
There
are many opportunities to go and buy tickets, and you should take one of those opportunities. This is our message to you.
There you go. Well, we wish you all the best for your season of A Doll's House.
Thank you.
With Foolish Wit, who are our fantastic sponsors for this month of Kick Arts as well.
Yeah.
So thank you so much. We really look forward to seeing it, and we look forward to seeing both of you back here in the future with whatever you go on to do next.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Now, Patrick, thank you so much for keeping me company this week.
No, that's all right.
And you might be back in a couple of weeks because Stephen's away for a little bit longer. And
I
much prefer to, you know, have some company. Now, we're going to go out tonight with another young up-and-coming performer who's actually being seen everywhere. And that is Emerson, who was, of course, the winner of Smoke-Free Rock Quest and things last year. Emma is a much beloved past student of both Stephen and mine. So this is their latest song called Tip of My Tongue. But in the meantime, I encourage you to all go out and kick some arts.
Kick some arts.
It all ends the same. My love's too far away to hear my own advice. One for change, stuck in one place, but my heart on ice. Try to melt the memories, but they're clogging up the drain. Try to stop the feeling, but I feel it all the same. So is this all a mistake? Is it too late for me to have a chance that I can take?
Okay, well, we didn't time that well, did we? We should be coming back on shortly.
Blah, 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 let's go kick some art.